Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd on the Double with the Double S Express. So you want to play with magic? Boy, you should know what you're falling for. Baby, do you dare to do this? Because I'm coming at you like a dark horse.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express. A little bit of a late start. I can't really call it a rain delay, as up and down the West Coast, it is pretty sunny, with the exception of parts of Western Washington. But hey, that is the rainy side of Washington State. Show 51 rolling out the gate. A little bit of a speed bump, a hiccup to start the show, but we are off and rolling. Sean Wally here going solo for the moment. Sean Boyd tied up tonight on assignment, and we may have a guest host tonight if we can work things out. So lots going on in the sports world, as always. What an incredible, incredible weekend of NBA basketball we had. Just a fabulous time in the NBA, as long as your team made it through. And let's go ahead and welcome in our very first co-host here on the Double with the Double S Express. I should say guest co-host, and that is David Massey from Portland, Oregon. David, how you doing tonight?
Pretty good. How you doing tonight, Sean?
Man, it's going well. Glad to have you on the show. So for those that don't know, and even those that have been listening here on the Double in the past year, They may know that you are our Oregon Duck insider, and you attended the University of Oregon, played football, linebacker in the mid-90s, and now you're here hosting a show.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a new endeavor for me. Like I said, it's one thing to be on as a guest and do an interview, but it's something completely different to be on as a co-host and actually, you know, be asking the questions and doing the interviewing. So, you know, hopefully I don't make any mistakes, and hopefully I make the Duck Nation proud.
Well, you've definitely got some little bit of big shoes to fill with Sean Boyd doing his great work, and I know you'll do him and myself and the show proud, and you've got good insight and good knowledge, so welcome to the show for sure.
Hey, thanks for having me. Like I said, I'm really looking forward to jumping into this thing tonight, and you know, who knows, maybe we can do it again in the future.
Let's go ahead and head on out to the Papa John's Tri-Cities Hotline and welcome in big-time guest number one tonight, and that is Spiro Dedis, sports broadcaster, CBS Sports extraordinaire. Spiro, thanks so much for your time tonight.
My pleasure, guys. How you doing?
Pretty good. How you doing tonight, Spiro?
Good. Just hanging at the house, watching some NBA playoffs. It's a good night. Enjoying it.
So who are you rooting for tonight?
Oh, man, you know, I'm just rooting for good games at this point, you know. I mean, no rooting interest, to be honest with you. But, you know, everyone's talked about how compelling the postseason has been so far. You know, I think we've all been lucky as NBA fans. And you just hope that it continues because, I've never seen a litany of games over a course of an entire postseason round that have been this competitive. You know, the overtime games and the close, hard-fought games that we've seen. And tonight, you know, I know the first game was a little bit of a surprise, but to have an upset to start this next round with Washington winning in Indy, you know, is an indication that the excitement is going to continue.
You've called a lot of sports in your day, and I believe you just finished up with the NCAA tournament last month and some great games there. And as you're saying, great games here in the NBA continue. And it's great to see the fans get excited and awesome games both in the East and the West, and you know, the playoffs are really doing a good service for the NBA.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, this is what I think the fans wait for year long. You know, the regular season in the NBA is so long, you know, it just seems to go on forever. But, you know, this is the payoff this time of year. You know, the weather gets warm. You know, if you're an East Coast guy like myself, you know, this is the time of year that you really relish and look forward to as an NBA fan. And, you know, I can remember growing up as a Knicks fan here in New York, and there was nothing like this time of year, you know, when the calendar page turned to May and the games got so big and so exciting, and watching those Knicks teams battles over the years, you know, this was always my favorite time of year, you know, to watch the NBA playoffs and see how these guys perform with the money on the table and as the pressure rises, you know, as you get into the later rounds. I mean, this is what you pay for as a fan. This is what you hope to see. And you know, I'm just hoping that that the excitement continues.
Now, Sparrow, with all the sports that you've called, what is your favorite to call?
Oof, that's tough. You know, I've had the good fortune to work in the NBA with the Lakers for 6 years and the Knicks the last three. So I've done a lot more NBA games than any other sport. I've also had the really good fortune to work the NCAA tournament. You know, Sean, we were together in Spokane. This was my fifth year doing the tournament. That is just an incredible experience over the course of 3 or 4 days. The preparation and the stories about the individual players and the teams. I also have a chance to do NFL football for CBS, and that, in our industry, is really the pinnacle. You know, the NFL is by far and away the most popular sport now in this country. So I've been really fortunate. My favorite, it's tough to say, it really is. I've definitely done way more NBA than any other sport. The NFL, I'm still kind of getting my feet under me a little bit, you know, with the preparation and just the amount of work and research that goes into doing each game. But, you know, I'm a basketball guy and a football guy, and I hope to be doing it for a long time.
You know, Sparrow, one thing that me and you both have in common, you know, I'm also a Knicks fan. You know, I'm not from New York, but, you know, grew up a huge Knicks fan. And one thing that I kind of wondered over the years of, you know, seeing you, you know, working for the MSG Network, who would you say would be, you know, your favorite Nick of all time?
Oh, that's easy. Patrick. I mean, it's not even close. I grew up as a kid. To say that I idolized Pat Ewing would be probably like the biggest understatement in the world. I mean, I was like obsessed with the guy to the point where all my friends growing up thought I was like nuts. I mean, I thought literally like something was wrong with me. Like I walked like him. I tried to talk like him. You know, it was just really weird. I like got all his mannerisms down. When I played basketball with my buddies, you know, in the driveway, I would shoot with like him. I would try to dribble like him. I had like my free throw routine down the same way he shot his free throws. I mean, it was scary. It was a little disturbing, to be honest with you. And you know, a guy who to me was so star-crossed because you know, as great as he was, you know, Hall of Fame player, top 50 player, the best teammate he ever had in his Hall of Fame career was John Starks, who I loved. But I mean, that I think is all you need to know about the luck that Patrick had. I mean, you look at all the other great players that won championships; they had way more talent around them. And you know, Patrick, it broke my heart to see him come up short, you know, for that championship every summer and every spring. But you know, to answer your question, it's Patrick Ewing, and it's not even close.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, you're definitely a guy from my heart, because I was the same way. I grew up you know, watching Patrick Ewing when he was in college at Georgetown, and when he you know, that was the first lottery that they had, and when he went to the Knicks, I was, you know, just like you, I was just bouncing off the walls. And so, yeah, it's really easy to understand, you know, why he'd be your favorite Knick of all time. And and another question that I also, you know, kind of wondered, I remember seeing you a couple of years ago on TV, and it was, you were doing a special with Walt Frazier, and I was wondering, is he as cool in person as he comes off on TV? Because that guy, he comes off like he's just so laid back, and the clothes and just his demeanor and everything is so laid back. Is he that cool?
Yes, he's cooler in person. He is, you know, for a guy who is as legendary in this city, in New York, as Walt Frazier is, and as revered as he is, I mean, the guy basically is royalty in this town, and he will be for as long as he lives, you know, being the star of the only two Knick championship teams that have ever graced this city. He is as nice and as sweet a guy as I've ever been around. You know, a guy who, you know, Clyde definitely has a little bit of an ego on him for sure, but it's not the kind of ego that turns people off. I mean, when he talks about his teams that he played with and his teammates, you know, he talks like they were the best team, you know, of his generation, and who could argue with him, you know? But in terms of the kind of person he is off the floor and away from work, He's very quiet. You know, he's a guy who kind of minds his own business. You know, I had the great fortune to sit next to him on the airplane a couple of times on the road trips. And, you know, we would talk a little bit, and I'd pick his brain about some things. But he's just a really soft-spoken, big-hearted guy who, you know, when he would get going and start telling stories, you know, everyone would kind of sit next to him and kind of listen in and, you know, take everything that he was saying. To me, that working this job and being around Walt Frazier was one of the things I'll take away most from it. You know, it was a real joy and a privilege to be around him these last couple of years, and then I really enjoyed it.
That's the voice of sportscaster Spiro Dedis, CBS Sports. And Spiro, it is very comforting, is not the right word, but when players really are nice, jovial, humble versus the other direction, what do you think the percentages are in the guys you run into that are really great guys and then those that aren't?
Well, you know, I think for the most, I can only speak about the guys that I've been around, you know, the guys with the Lakers and the guys with the Knicks. And I got to say, I've been lucky. I've been around a really good group. You know, the Lakers years, the 6 years from 2005 to 11, you know, you had some of the great, great names in the league. Obviously, Kobe, who, you know, is such a huge personality and, you know, one of the great players this game has ever seen. You know, to be around him for 6 years was just, I mean, one of the all-time experiences that I'll ever have. And I could do this for another 20, 30 years, and having a chance to call that guy's games for 6 years was remarkable. You know, the 81-point game and, you know, the two championships and the three straight trips to the finals. But, you know, just beyond that, just being around him, you know, at the hotels and on the airplane and, you know, listening to him talk and interact with his teammates and people around the team, you know, it was so cool to be around that. And, you know, Derek Fisher, who I had the utmost respect for, I mean, such a gentleman, one of the true gentlemen I think that we have in pro sports. And Lamar Odom, who is probably one of my all-time favorite players, all-time favorite guys. You know, I know he had some issues the last couple of years, but as loyal and as big-hearted guy, I should say, that I've been around in the NBA. And these Knicks teams the last 3 years, you know, Carmelo is a great guy, you know, a guy who, you know, certainly has the right to have a huge ego. But, you know, Carmelo, to me, he strikes me as a guy who never takes himself too seriously. You know, he's just one of the guys. You see him interact with his teammates. They all genuinely like him. And you can go up and down the list. I mean, it's just a really good group of guys with this Knicks team. And hopefully with the chemistry and some of the additions that they'll make this summer, they can turn things around after what was a pretty disappointing year.
Now, Spiro, in your own career, you're currently with CBS Sports, and you've done work for many different networks, from the NFL Network to SNY there in New York. Do you ever look back and think to how it all began, going to Fordham, and how things have just taken off for you and all the great things you've been able to do in the industry?
I think about it a lot, guys. I really do. You know, I it wasn't too long ago that I was a broadcast student at Fordham in the Bronx here in New York. And, you know, me and my buddies who I was with at that point, you know, we're all dreaming. And, you know, we'd sit around and talk about some of the jobs we wanted to have. And, you know, never in my wildest dreams did I think that my career would develop the way it has, as quickly as it has. Because as you guys know, you know, usually in this business, you go to college, you get your degree, and you gotta, you know, kind of bang around in the minors in, you know, small towns, wherever you are around the country, before you get your real shot. So, you know, I know how lucky I am, believe me. You know, I mean, there's a thousand other guys out there that could have done what I've done. But for whatever reason, I was just fortunate, you know, in the right place at the right time, made some of the connections that I had to make, and one job kind of led to the next. And, you know, for my first frontline job to be in L.A. with the Lakers, you know, arguably the most storied franchise in professional sports, was a dream come true. And then, you know, to move on to CBS and to have that opportunity the last couple of years, you know, it's been really a, you know, kind of a charmed path for me in terms of my career, and not a day goes by that I don't, you know, take stock and appreciate the opportunities that I've been given, and I hope to be doing this for a long time.
Hey, you know, Sparrow, one question that I mean, I've been wondering for a while, ever since I first saw you on TV and then kind of, learn a little bit more about you, is, I mean, you started at a really early age, because at 24, you did the 2004 Summer Olympics, and that's something that, broadcasters who have been in the industry for years don't get a chance to do. And one thing that, I kind of wonder is, did you ever kind of get really nervous about what you were doing, or kind of feel overwhelmed? Because most guys at 24, they're still going to parties and hanging out, having a good time. But, you were working the Olympics.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I still get nervous now. I mean, when you're prepping for an NFL game, at least me, I still feel overwhelmed. When head hits the pillow on a Saturday night before an NFL game, you've done so much research during the course of the week. I mean, your head's almost ready to explode with info. So, to me, you always get the goosebumps, even when you're a guy who's been in it for 10 years or, 20 years or whatever the number may be. But, I think back to when I was 24, 25 and being in Athens for the Olympics, I was so green at that point. I could remember, prepping for sports that I had no experience with. I was doing field hockey in Athens. I remember I got called in one day, in an emergency situation to do a skeet shooting competition, and I literally had never seen a skeet shooting competition in my life, and here I am at the Olympics calling it for NBC. They gave you a research manual that was about 3 inches thick, a couple of weeks to prepare, and off you went. You did these sports, these Olympic sports that, at least for me, I grew up having no experience with. And that, it was events like that really, at least for me, kind of were overwhelming, because obviously it's your big moment. I mean, you're 24, 25 years old, and you're at the Olympics. I mean, it's a dream assignment, and you want to get it right. Luckily it went well, and, the feedback was good, and that job kind of led to the next. And that's how it is in this industry. But in terms of feeling the excitement and feeling the butterflies, I mean, I still feel that now, being in this business now since 2001 when I graduated at Fordham.
Another question to just kind of piggyback off that, you said having a lot of, success early on. Where do you see yourself at, say, 10, 15, 20 years from now?
Oof. That's hard. I'd love to still be with CBS, guys. Maybe doing a full NFL schedule. To me, if I could be doing NFL games and NBA games and obviously college basketball with CBS, I'd be happy. I don't need to do any more than that. I don't want to push my luck too much. I've been so fortunate up till this point. That to me, if you ask me, that's probably what I'd want to do. Full NFL and a mixture of some NBA and college basketball, and I'd be about as happy a guy as there is.
Yeah. Spiro Dedis of CBS Sports with us here on the Double with the Double S Express. Last two questions for you. We'll let you run here, Spiro. Who are some guys that you have looked up to and have guided you throughout your early career?
Well, first and foremost, Mike Breen, without a doubt. Mike is another Fordham graduate in New York. Who I had a chance to spark a conversation with and a relationship with when I was still a student. And he's been like a big brother. He really has. He's guided me through some really important career decisions that I had to make. And now having a chance to work behind him with the Knicks, we've really gotten even closer. And I consider Mike to be not only a mentor, but really someone who is like a big brother, who I can go to when I've got a big decision to make or whatever is going on in life, even away from work. I mean, he's been so invaluable for me, and I really owe him a lot. And even, listening to Mike growing up, I mean, Mike, when I was in high school and college, Mike was doing the Knicks on the radio before he moved over to TV from Marv. And a lot of my style comes from the way he broadcasts. And I've told Mike that, a lot of the stuff that I use, I kind of stole from him in a subtle way. And he always gets a chuckle out of that. But first and foremost, Mike Breen, without a doubt. And, there's so many guys out there, guys. I mean, depending on the sport, football, I've always kind of looked up to Al Michaels, who to me is the all-time greatest football announcer that we've had, probably right with Pat Summerall. Pat was a legend in his own time, and, he was probably the first football announcer that I could remember listening to as a kid growing up. A guy who mastered brevity, making a powerful statement in very few amount of words. and his words really resonated, and that's something I tried to take from Pat Summerall. Basketball, aside from Mike, you know, growing up in New York, I mean, Marv was the guy. You know, he was, you know, like everyone in L.A. grew up on Chick Hearn. For us, it was Marv Albert, you know, doing the Knicks games and obviously the big national games on NBC at the time. But Marv was so unique in his style that there was very few things that you could take away from him without, you know, sounding like you were trying to be Marv. So, you know, it was Marv's mastery, I think, of the big moment that I tried to emulate as best I could. I mean, he was so masterful at it. So, I mean, there's a long list. I mean, I could go down and talk about it for a long time. But, you know, guys like Joe Buck, who I think is so great and so versatile. Ian Eagle, who is just now starting to get his due on a national level. I mean, he's been so good doing the NFL on CBS for years and years. I mean, he started, I think, even younger than me on the national level, doing Jets games on the radio and then moving over to CBS eventually in the 90s. And doing the Nets for a bunch of years, you know, going back to their Jersey days and now in Brooklyn. I mean, we've been blessed here, certainly in the New York area, with some of the top voices in the industry.
You know, one final question I have is, what is your preference between radio and TV? Because they're two completely different animals, and, you know, like some people, you hear them say that they have a great face for radio. You know, I mean, you know, you're a young, good-looking guy. I mean, do you have a preference as far as radio or TV?
You know, I think if you can have a mixture of both, guys, at least for me, that's ideal. Because anyone will tell you that's done play-by-play, that the foundation for the craft starts on the radio. And to me, if you don't have a radio background, you know, I don't want to say you're not a true play-by-play guy, but you know, it's hard to really, you know, get as well-rounded as you want to be. To me, the greatest play-by-play guys all started on radio. I mean, you can go through the all-time greats that we've had in this industry, and in some form or fashion, they started their careers on radio. TV, obviously, you know, with the way the median has changed now and the way people's viewing habits have changed, everyone's got a TV, everyone's got an HD TV. I mean, that's the way people want to take in their game. So, you know, the prestige, I think, obviously comes with doing TV, but, you know, at least for me, my true passion is radio. And the reason is simple. When you do a game on TV, you're basically like a traffic cop. You know, the person watching at home or wherever he is can see what's happening. You're basically just kind of like a navigator, you know, giving the stats, giving some background on the players, setting up your analyst for some good conversation. When you're doing a game on the radio, that person who's in their car or in front of a laptop, they can't see. So they're totally dependent on you to paint the word picture and to give them as much description as you possibly can. And to me, that pressure is really what it's all about. And when you walk away from a game on radio and have a good game, that to me is the most satisfying feeling that I can have. You know, it really is, because, again, the person listening is totally dependent on what you're saying, and that's a responsibility that I think any good play-by-play guy really takes to heart. And so, you know, my true passion is radio, but, you know, if I could have both, you know, it would be an ideal situation.
Spiro Dinas, thank you so much for your time, your insight. I know it's getting late for you. We'll let you get back to the NBA game, and thank you for being approachable, humble, and being on the show tonight.
My pleasure, guys. We'll do it again.
Sounds good. There goes Spiro Dinas of CBS Sports, our big time guest number one here on the Double with the Double S Express. David, it was great to talk to Spiro.
Yeah, it definitely was. And hopefully, you know, everybody at home listening, make sure you stay tuned. Coming up after the break, we're going to talk about, you know, kind of some shakeup in the Pac-12. You know, what school is looking for a new coach? And, you know, a few players got dismissed from one of my favorite teams this today. And also, we have our second guest, which is Steve Whitehead. Right here on the Double X Express. And do the Harlem Shake.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with a fun, family-friendly atmosphere, You'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours.
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boy.
Standing in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And the world's gonna know your name. Yeah. Cause you fell with the first flame.
Yeah. Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside a special guest co-host tonight, David Massey, filling in for Sean Boyd. And let's go right back out to the Papa John's Tri-Cities hotline and welcome in big-time guest number two, Steve Whitehead, wide receiver for the Tri-Cities Fever in the Indoor Football League. Steve, what's going on tonight, man?
Nothing much, man. How's it going? Nothing much. How's it going?
Things are good, Steve. Man, you recently rejoined the Tri-Cities Fever after taking some time off, and I'm curious, what brought you back to the game?
The combination of a lot of things kind of brought me back to the game. The fact that, I only have a short window of opportunity to play before my body kind of turns over on me. The fact that I'm located in the city and where my business is, and, you know, they had an opportunity to play with the team that I'm familiar with. And the fact that they also brought Houston Lillard back, you know, those combination of three things kind of, you know, sent me in the direction of coming back and talking to Coach Shackelford, and he welcomed me back.
Yeah, that's great. You've had a lot of good action and great catches, awesome catch and runs you threw up on social media today. One of your touchdowns from Saturday night in the 4-point loss on Saturday, but it was a great contest, a close contest, and you guys put up a hard fought. Hard fight, excuse me.
It definitely was a tough fight. You know, the credit goes to Nebraska for coming out on our turf and putting up a good showing on them. You know, but we did leave some points out there. We did leave some plays out on the field that could have went the other way and kind of changed the game for us a little bit. But that's a part of the game. And, you know, myself coming in this past week and Houston being in only for a few weeks, you know, we're kind of trying to knock some rust off. And unfortunately, we weren't able to knock off enough to prevail to win this past weekend.
You know, Steve, one thing that I was kind of wondering, I kind of like what you said earlier about, you know, you've got a small window of time before your body kind of, you know, gives out on you. And is that kind of what motivated you to you know, kind of branch out and start doing your own personal training?
Definitely. You know, I actually started my personal training because of a lot of injuries that I went through. Being 28 years old, I've had 3 knee surgeries. I broke my back. I've had hip surgery, and I've also had shoulder surgery. And, you know, each time I kind of look back at the training aspect of it and found out that there are some things that I could have done differently to kind of help my body last a lot longer. You know, you're only successful in this game as long as your body lasts. And if that ever gives out, then your money kind of gives out too, and everything else kind of gives out with it. So what I did in turn was, instead of taking the coaching route, I kind of went through the training route and wanted to help guys, you know, take care of their body better and, you know, create more tangible things for them to be able to present to scouts, to be able to present on the field and be able to do things that they didn't think they were typically capable of doing, and just showing them the right way to go about it to keep them healthy and to have some longevity in their career.
Yeah, most definitely. And in fact, one thing, and you'll find this out as you kind of progress in your age, because, you know, I'm older than you. I'm 43, but also, you know, play college football. And one thing I kind of look back on now and I kind of regret is that I didn't really kind of take care of my body like I should have when I was in college, because I was more concerned as far as, you know, game over. I want to hurry up and get to a party. And so,
exactly.
I mean, do you kind of see younger guys today kind of doing that same thing, or guys today kind of more focused to the point where when the game is over, they kind of get ice, get treatment, get stretched, and kind of take care of themselves?
Well, you know, I think that's the battle when you're young, is trying to fight that feeling of feeling like you need to go party and not understanding that your body is what's going to help you keep this partying going, I guess, so to speak. But, you know, a lot of guys kind of forget about that, and then they get caught up in the fact that they're youthful and your body, they think their body's going to last forever. And in reality, it's the first thing to go. You know, I kind of equate it to how, you know, sportscasters kind of compare LeBron and Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant and saying when they first came in the league, it was all about the athleticism and ducking over everybody and running past everybody. And then it comes a time where their game has to kind of evolve, and then they have to rely on their wisdom and experience, because the tangible things end up losing at some point in time as you get older.
Yeah. Steve, there's a lot of talented athletes out there that play even up to the college level, and you played receiver at McNeese State and playing for the Tri-Cities Fever in the Indoor Football League. What do you think sets an athlete apart that can get to that next level at some type of professional level and continue striving in athletics?
Well, you know, everywhere you go, you got to kind of set yourself apart. Myself, you know, being of shorter stature, I always had a chip on my shoulder, and you know, I always knew I had to prove myself, and I had to go about doing the smaller things a little bit better than the other guys could do. And I think now, once you get to this level, and guys here, they know football, they know what it's about, they know the business of it, they know the routine that comes along with it. The hardest part about leaving from this arena and going to the NFL or going to a higher level is just keeping yourself in shape and knowing that you might have a possibility. The hardest thing to deal with is not knowing, because you're not coming out of college where you know you're going to have a pro day, where you know you're going to have scouts at your game. You're coming here at Tri-Cities or anywhere else in the IFL, and scouts may not be there. So you have to put together good film, be able to get the good film out, and then as a result, if they do call you, you have to be prepared with your body to be able to go out there and showcase yourself. So it's actually a lot harder to be in this position that you're in now, because you're in the not know. You're in the not know situation. You don't know. And you don't know if you work hard enough, will it pay off? And if you don't work hard enough, when you get that opportunity, it still won't pay off, because you didn't create that for yourself. So, you know, it's just a little tough being here. But, you know, I think guys are very professional in this league. I think they just kind of get caught up of what city they're in at the time and forget the bigger picture of trying to move up, because that's initially what everybody comes to this league for anyway, is because it's almost like a minor league system for football. So in order for you to get up and move up, you have to continuously get film. And hopefully they take heed to that and know that they have to take it seriously.
Steve, what do you think is your greatest attribute on the football field?
I think I'm smarter than a lot of guys out there. I know that kind of plays into my success a lot, and it also kind of plays into my downfall a lot. Like I said, I'm smaller in stature. I'm not the fastest. I'm not the biggest. I'm somewhat of the quickest. So I got to kind of outwit people and outsmart people and, you know, know that I can do things that they are incapable of doing, or, so to speak, put their body in bad situations to give myself the advantage and the leverage.
Hey, Steve, one thing, you know, you've mentioned a couple of times as far as, you know, being small in stature, and especially with, you know, this kind of a transition nowadays, you see a lot of receivers who are almost more like a tight end, you know, 6'3", 6'4", up in, you know, 200-plus pounds. You know, do you feel that there's any time that, you know, coaches or scouts or any teams kind of, you know, kind of discriminate on you just based on your size?
Oh, well, definitely. You know, for a long time, you know, like I said, I'm 28. For a long time, I've been bitter about the situation. But then you have to kind of look at it for what it is and look at it as a business and understand and actually put yourself in a coach's position, because I look at myself, I understand that I don't pass the eye test. Most people don't know who I am outside of the field until I tell them so. So, you know, if I'm a coach and I see somebody that's 6'4", 6'3", that runs 4.4, 4.3, and they may not have produced well in college, but I'm going to be egotistical enough as a coach to take a chance on that guy more so than I'll take a chance on a 5'7 guy who is proving himself, because I have a lot more room for error with a 6'3 guy who runs 4.4 than I do with a 5'7 guy who doesn't pan out for you. So I understand the nature of the business, and once I kind of looked at it from that perspective, I kind of started, you know, humbling myself and being a little bit more understanding of the situation, I should say.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that I can remember back from, you know, my days of playing, you know, there was a lot of times that we had to kind of keep our head on a swivel because receivers, they would try to crack back block on linebackers, and you know, has there ever been a time where you find yourself on the field and you had to block a linebacker or something that was significantly bigger than you, and you had to kind of second guess yourself?
You know, that I think you kind of get rid of that at a younger age. You know, in high school and college, you almost have to sell yourself out in order to get your opportunity on the field. And, you know, the last thing that you want to be on the field is nervous or scared or even thinking about what you have to do. It's almost just a go-get-it mentality. And I've never let my stature be the reason why I didn't do something or why I was incapable of doing something. It almost does it in reverse. I use it in spite to go and show you that, yes, I can go head up with you and everything's going to be okay. And, yes, I can run with you and everything's going to be okay. So I think I kind of got that out of the way at a young age. And plus having a brother that's 7 years older than me kind of took a lot of that fear away.
Now, Steve, outside of football, you are with Elite Ambitions Training out of Pasco, Washington. How do you relay this drive, this desire to be great to just the average athlete out there that wants to get healthy, wants to get better?
Well, it's not even athlete. We kind of cater to all walks of life. You know, the thing about being an athlete and the beauty about being an athlete, at some point in time, especially the higher level you go, at some point in time, you have to figure out a way to push yourself. You know, if you're on scholarship at the collegiate level and we're running 110-yard gasses and coach says that, hey, if we don't make these gasses, then everybody's going to have to run over. And when you look around and you see 79 other guys that are bigger than you and who are going to get on your tail if you don't make sure you run these 110-yard gasses, you kind of have to look in the mirror and find yourself and dig deep and realize that you are capable of doing such things. So, you know, that's with all other people. The thing is, we are our own worst enemies. We are the ones who stop ourselves from pushing ourselves further. So me, I just try to be that push and let people know that you can go further. You know, we set the limitations for ourselves because the impossible was only created because we created it in our mind. So if we can get past that in our own head, then everything else will take care of itself.
That's some great insight from Steve Whitehead, wide receiver for the Tri-Cities Fever and trainer at Elite Ambitions Training in Pasco, Washington. And Steve, what are you finding? Are there similarities to the buttons you have to push with these people that come and train with you and want to get in better shape and get healthy, or does everybody have a different button?
I think it's actually the same button, and you can actually push that button a little bit harder when it comes to the regular people because now you're dealing with your livelihood and now you're dealing with your health. You're not necessarily dealing with your teammate or having to go out there and put a performance on the field. You're dealing with yourself, and you're dealing with yourself and how you're going to be able to provide for your family in the future. So that's like I tell everybody that comes in, how successful are you in your business life? How well do you attack your business life? And if you attack it hard, you need to come here for an hour a day, 4% out of your day, and attack it the same way so we can have life meet up at the middle.
Hey, Stephen, one question I have is, now, you know, especially nowadays, you got a lot of parents who, you know, they try to live vicariously through their kids and they try to get them set up with personal trainers and specialized coaches, things like that. But the reality of it is, and you know full well that, you know, there's a small percentage of kids that will go from high school to college and even a smaller
yes,
percentage
sir.
That'll go from, you know, college to pros. You know, I mean, so do you ever have a hard time kind of stressing that to the parents? Because I think sometimes parents, they can kind of get their kids head so gassed up and not necessarily being realistic as far as what their ability is. Do you have any, have you ever had to kind of set a parent down and explain to them that this is the reality as far as how good your child is and kind of be brutally honest with them?
Well, I think we kind of have a system that's set up where these parents know that they're coming into a humbling situation. We don't set any kids apart. We let these parents know that they have to go out here for themselves. It's not about you. Yes, we're thank you for bringing them to us to give them better treatment and better training. But at the same time, you have to know that you're putting an investment, and all investments don't work out. So this investment may not pan out for your child. But what I did learn is, and in high school, I met Tommy Bowden and had a chance to sit down with him. And he basically told us, you know, if you really want to play collegiate football, you can do things necessary to allow yourself to play collegiate football and get some type of schooling. Whether it's at the D2 level, whether it's at the D1AA level, whether it's at the D1 level, you can find some type of way if you're good enough and if you present the things that coaches and recruiters are looking for, you can give yourself an opportunity to play somewhere. Because I promise you, I played with 30% of people on my collegiate team who did not deserve a scholarship.
Wow. Now, and also to kind of follow up on that, you know, and you know full well, you know, you get to college and there's always guys who they come in and they're talking a good game, and you kind of look at them and you're thinking to yourself, how'd this guy even end up here? Have you ever, had a teammate that was either in front of you on the depth chart that you knew you were better than, and you had to kind of go out and prove it to the coaches and to the rest of the team?
Of course, man. You know, that's actually the changing point of my whole career is in college. I was playing for my team my sophomore year. I made the transition from running back to receiver, and the coaches kind of had this appeal and this draw to this other receiver, and I kind of figured out that, man, hey, you know, I get bubbles. I get to do punt return. I get to do kick return. I get the jet sweep. So I'm just going to go ahead and focus on those things and do those to the best of my abilities. I'm going to go out to practice. It was spring practice. I would go out to spring practice. I would catch the ball. I would finish. I wouldn't say anything. And all I would focus on was myself and controlling the things that I can control. And I just knew they weren't going to let me start. But I come in the summer and I look at the depth chart, and I'm number one on the depth chart. And that following season, I made first-team All-American. That following season, I made Conference Player of the Year. And that following season, I was the MVP of our team, just simply off being able to control myself and what I was capable of doing. So when kids come to me now and complain about their coaches, I tell them, what coach wouldn't want to play you if you're the best player for their team? Put yourself in their situation and understand what they want. Would you put a player in that you can't trust? Would you put a player in that's not consistent? No, you wouldn't. So why would you expect your coach to do the same thing? And I think once kids start to understand that, they start to focus on themselves and start to control themselves, and then everything takes care of itself.
Man, Steve, you can hear the passion and the desire and the heat in your voice, and you're definitely knowing what you're talking about, and you've got your head on right, and you're doing great things with the Fever and great things with Elite Ambitions Training in Pasco, Washington. Best of luck to you the rest of the season, and try and catch the Colorado team and get into the playoffs and make things happen with you and Houston Lillard coming back, and continued success to you. Thanks for joining us tonight, and we'll love to have you on in the future.
Fellas, y'all don't know how much of a pleasure it was for y'all to have me tonight. I thank y'all tremendously.
Hey, the pleasure's all hours. Thank you so much, Steve Whitehead. We'll be in touch soon.
Yes, sir.
There goes Steve Whitehead, wide receiver for the Tri-Cities Fever in the Indoor Football League, and also a trainer at Elite Ambitions in Pasco, Washington. Man, David Massey, Steve Whitehead's got it going on, and he knows what he's talking about when it comes to success on the field and in the training room.
He sure does. In fact, he got me motivated. After we get off here tonight, I might go head down to the gym and get a workout in.
Do some push-ups, some sit-ups, get some definitely getting that body right. Just a great interview, and he's got a lot of insight on how to be successful on and off the field.
Most definitely.
All right, so that wraps up big-time guest number two tonight, Stephen Whitehead from the Tri-Cities Fever Indoor Football League team. And when we come back after the break, we've got a lot of sports to touch on and a little time to do it. We'll get to David Massey's points on what's going down in Clipperland with Donald Sterling. So stay tuned. You're listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Likes the inconvenience of car repairs. Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services. Platinum service without the platinum price.
Guys, are you having trouble getting to sleep? Would you like to know the secret to getting a great night's sleep every night? Bruce Feeney discovered this secret, a new, all-natural sleep aid for men. Listen to what he says about it.
Hey, you know, I tried a product recently called Love to Sleep. It was a great product, helped me a lot. Took 3 or 4 days for it to start working in my system, and I fell asleep very quickly and got up rested. And if I got up during the middle of the night, I ended up coming back to bed and fell right back to sleep. I would recommend it to all my friends.
If you too would love to get a good night's sleep every night and wake up feeling great in the morning, try Love to Sleep, the new sleep aid for men. Your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed. And because Love to Sleep is all natural, it's completely safe with no side effects or risk of dependency. Go to lovetosleep.com. That's lovetosleep.com.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
Let's get back to great sports talk with big-time guests on the Double with the Double S Express.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally, normally joined by Sean Boyd, who we know his head is bobbing to that Avicii levels coming back in. He loves that song, and he is not with us tonight. We've got David Massey filling in for him, my guest co-host. David, it's been a fun show.
Oh, yeah, I'm enjoying myself. And for the people at home that may not know, my middle name is Sean, so we're still on the Sean, the S&S Express.
Absolutely, keeping it together. Keeping the double S rolling. And we've had two great guests tonight. Spiro Ditas, play-by-play extraordinaire, CBS Sports. And we just spoke with Steve Whitehead, wide receiver for the Tri-Cities Fever in the Indoor Football League and personal trainer at Elite Ambitions in Pasco, Washington. And they both had great things to say and some good insight.
Oh, yeah, they sure did. I mean, like I said, it was a pleasure to talk to Spiro. You know, I've seen him on TV several times. And I admire his work, but then also, like I said, talking to Steven, you know, a young man that definitely has his head on his shoulders going in the right direction.
All right, David, now the floor is yours. The Los Angeles Clippers have an owner that is a, for lack of a better term, a POS. You can figure that out on your own. And he has basically ran his way out of the NBA, but now he's trying to sue the league, and the league wants the team to be sold because of his derogatory remarks. You've got the floor. Your take on Donald Sterling.
Well, first of all, my take is, I mean, you know, I think everybody would be in agreement. What he said was, I mean, outrageous, ridiculous, and just flat out ignorant. You know, but for me, the one frustration that I've had about this whole situation is hearing all of these, you know, all the self-righteous people who are coming out and kind of slamming the Clippers and saying that they shouldn't even be playing, and how could they play for an owner like that, and they're going to go out and win a championship for a bigot who doesn't even like them. But, you know, I look at it like this. For all those people who are saying, how could they go out and play for this guy who's a racist, I guarantee you a lot of us have probably worked for somebody who also is a racist. The difference is, you know, they happen to catch Donald Sterling on tape, you know, sharing his ignorant views. And so for people to come out and slam these guys and say, how can they play? I think that that's just, like I said, it's kind of over the top, because really at the end of the day, you know, you're playing for your teammates. Those are your brothers. Those are the people you're playing for. You know, all my years of playing sports, yeah, I had coaches that I was close to, coaches that I really admired. But ultimately at the end of the day, I was out there putting it on line for my teammates, for my brothers. And I think that's what it boils down to. And like I said, so for me, just hearing all this backlash from you know, some people in the media, there's even a few guys who are, you know, former NBA players who are saying that they wouldn't have played. And I'm thinking to myself, well, it's really easy to say that when you're not in that position to have to kind of try and make that tough call. Now, I was also happy to hear that, you know, on the same day that they had, you know, that they had voted to ban him from the league, that there was pretty much a general consensus among all the players who are still in the playoffs that had they not done something drastic enough to satisfy the you know the outrage, you know, that all the players were willing to boycott and not play at all. And so I think that that would have been a bigger statement than the Clippers just deciding that, hey, we're not going to go out and play, we're going to forfeit a game. And like I said, for me, I just look at it like, I think that for all those people who are saying that they couldn't work for something like that, they're kidding themselves if they think that they haven't already worked for somebody who shares those views and then some. But like I said, the difference is these guys on the Clippers, they're doing it, they're playing for millions of dollars versus doing it for a few thousand dollars.
A four-minute monologue by David Massey, special guest co-host tonight. And now let's bring in Sean Boyd is with us now here on the line. And we are now a triple-headed monster here on the double with, I guess, the Triple S Express tonight.
Sean!
Hey, what's going on, guys? Hey, this was just an awesome show to listen to, man. And, you know, I can't begin to tell you, you know, the guests that were on, Spiro and Steve, man, these were some interesting points, you know. And David Massey, I got to give it to you, man. You got a, like what you were saying with Spiro, man, you got a face for radio, buddy.
Exactly. I'll be the first person to admit that.
Man, I, you know, it's been a treat. Sorry I've been away. I'm out on assignment here. I have some business to take care of. But, man, you guys rocked it tonight. It sounds real good.
Well, we're just trying to hold it down and do like you would do. And, you know, the show goes on, and you'll be back better than ever for, the one-year mark. Show 52 next week.
Yeah, that's going to be an exciting time, show number 52. But, man, I mean, there are some things that you guys were just talking about. And for one, you know, talking about the L.A. Clippers. And, you know, for me being a Golden State Warriors fan and, you know, and David, of course, you with the Portland Trailblazers, man, I mean, the Clippers right now are really showing out. They are just throttling OKC, which is probably, you know, we can probably give kudos to that since none of us are OKC fans. And we all know that, but man, what a great job the Clippers are doing with overcoming this adversity.
Yeah, in fact, you know what's funny? I think that this adversity will actually help them because, I mean, you saw the way that they played on Saturday, the way they're looking tonight. You know, they're looking spectacular. I mean, they are really looking good. And I look at it like this. I mean, and I think most people who know me know I'm a huge Miami Heat fan, and no, it's not a bandwagon thing. You know, very good friends, high school friends with Eric Spoelstra. But I would love to see the Clippers and the Heat go at it because I think if you got both those teams on the court, you know, we'll see some 140-point games.
You know, Sean Boyd, what I want to know is how many other spectacular guests and friends does David Massey have that he's holding out for our show? It's like we worked down at the University of Oregon and got David involved with, you know, working in sports television for CBS, the Arizona-Oregon game, and all of a sudden, here I am back by the trucks, and I see Mr. Massey chumming it up with Damon Stoudemire, and now he's dropping Eric Spoelstra on us. I'm like, oh my goodness.
You know what, Sean Welly, I fail to believe that David Massey would be holding out on us with guests, so I'm just going to leave it at that. But we have an awesome producer doing her thing as well with Alicia, but. But yeah, David. You tell me.
I'm not holding out, but unfortunately, what it comes down to is, you know, with everybody's, you know, all of us as adults and family men and jobs, and then those guys doing their thing and they're on the road traveling, and so for me, it's like, you know, anytime I do get a chance to see those guys, it's usually kind of spur of the moment on a whim. In fact, I didn't even realize that Damon was even coaching for Arizona. Until we were sitting in the production truck and I saw him on the bench. And so, I mean, it had probably been maybe 7 or 8 years since I'd even seen Damon. In fact, the last time I saw him was up in Seattle. He played in the I-5 Challenge. And kind of a funny story, that was actually, it was maybe a year or two before he retired, but I got a chance to see Damon Stoudemire go head-to-head with Mario Chalmers when Mario Chalmers was going into his senior year in high school. I talked to a friend of mine who lives in Seattle, and he said that he's been trying to find the tape of that game for like the last few years because, I mean, Damon would hit a three, and then Mario would come down and hit a three, and then Damon would come down crossing me over. But the highlight of the game was Mario Chalmers crossed over Damon Stoudemire at about the 3-point line drove in the lane and dunked on a guy who was about 6'10". And the gym went nuts. And so one thing that when I watch the Heat nowadays, I think to myself, can Mario still jump? Because I haven't seen him dunk, you know, since college.
Well, hey, you know, I have to put my money out there for Mighty Mouse, man. You can never count him out. And he had some incredible hops back in the day. I'm sure that if he stretched long enough, he can get those IT bands and hamstrings going to where he can put one down.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I'll tell you what, fellas, as I give you my word, this season I'll definitely round up, you know, a handful of people that I know who, you know, are either affiliated with the NBA or NFL and college basketball and definitely get them involved.
Well, I think that Mr. Boyd and I could rip up some Tacoma Thunder IOUs if that were the case.
You're going to bring up the Tacoma Thunder on me.
and that's something we didn't even mention tonight, David, is that you're the former owner of the Tacoma Thunder, and that's how we all met. And of course, we had the Tacoma Thunder reunion show, and that's another realm and another feather in your cap.
I'll tell you what, that was a fun time, and it was a crazy time. And I think and you guys can both attest, we were just by the seat of our pants some nights, just flying. And for me, that was the first time that I noticed a gray hair was when I had the Tacoma Thunder. And so that second year, it was actually part of why I decided, you know what, I don't want to keep doing this. It's like, you know, that time I was 36, 37. And I'm thinking, I got gray hairs in my goatee. It's like, you know, I can't keep this pace up. But I'll tell you what, that was a special time, and I wouldn't change it for nothing. In fact, you know, like me and you were talking earlier, Sean, you know, I'm sitting here right now wearing my Tacoma Thunder jersey.
Hey, man, that's what it's all about. If I had the chance, I'd be wearing it right now also. Those were some great times, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was crazy. In fact, that's part of the reason why, you know, nowadays, I'm Facebook friends with a lot of the guys from the Thunder. And so, I really enjoy just kind of seeing the path that everybody's life has taken since those days. And then especially, for me, a really cool highlight was I'm laying on my couch watching TV, and I look up at a McDonald's commercial, and I see Rasheed 7 and some change Bird in a McDonald's commercial.
Man, isn't that the craziest thing? I told Sean Wally that. I said, man, you have to see this commercial. I mean, it wasn't good enough that we saw him dancing around in the movie Semi-Pro with Will Ferrell. I mean, you know, now he's doing commercials, you know, being a part of our organization. And truth be told, and I mean, I don't see how Rasheed could deny this, but he wasn't the best player on our team. And so here this guy is, and he's doing some good things in movies and commercials, and so definitely wishing him the best.
Oh, yeah. In fact, me and Rasheed, we're actually, friends on Facebook, and we communicate back and forth. And that's one thing. I mean, he had a lot of natural talent and a lot of natural ability. But, I just think that, you know, the style of play in the NBA and things like that, you know, it really wasn't suited for him. But I'll tell you one thing. I remember he gave us some ridiculous highlights. Remember his doing the reverse 360 dunk, or, you know, coming up and snatching a jumper out of midair.
Oh, yeah, most definitely, man. I mean, he had some highlights for us. And, I mean, of course, when we played a lot of the teams, there weren't too many teams that had a 7-plus footer on the team. And so it was a great spectacle that he was. And, of course, the athlete that he was made it even better. So, yeah, man, we had some really good players.
Yeah. In fact, you know, it's funny. When I watch the Clippers now, I watched DeAndre Jordan, and he kind of reminds me of a more kind of polished, physical, Rasheed type player.
David, one thing I'd like to know from your perspective: we mentioned that you and I worked the Arizona-Oregon basketball game in the beginning of March for CBS Sports, and that was your first taste of sports production and working for a network that Sean Boyd's done since 2005 and I've been doing since 2000. What were your thoughts and your takeaways from that day?
Honestly, for me and my wife, we talk about it all the time. I will never watch a game on TV the same again, just seeing what goes into it, how things are edited, how things are cut, and the final product that gets presented to people on TV. So for me, that was the most, eye-opening thing. It's like sitting in the production truck and seeing how they queue up all the different segments and the kind of lead-ins, but then also just to kind of see how they shoot, how the promo is shot before the game, because, you know, for years watching TV, when they would show the crowd, I thought that had literally just happened right before tip-off, right before kickoff. And then when I realized, I'm like, oh, so that was shot an hour before the game even started? You know, so for me, that was probably the most eye-opening thing. But then also just, you know, you have no idea the amount of people that actually takes to pull off that type of production. So for me, like I said, being a former athlete, you don't really think about it. You go out and you play. But there's so many people behind the scenes, on the camera, in the truck, and on the sidelines, and so there's so many people that go into it. And like I said, that was it was spectacular for me to be a part of. And I'm looking forward to doing it again in the future, because like I said, it was amazing.
Mr. Boyd, I assume you have similar sentiments of your first games back in 05, 06?
Oh, most definitely. And of course, I remember that first time actually stepping out onto the field, or actually walking through the tunnel. And, of course, this was Seattle, and the Indianapolis Colts are in town, and it was just one of those feelings that, man, this is the big leagues, and these guys are, it's a whole different ball game. But like you were saying, David, even more so, just the preparation that's put into actually putting a production on the air. I mean, we take it for granted as a fan that, we're just going to sit and watch the game, but there's a lot of things, a lot of intricacies, when you're talking about the tech manager, you're talking about the director, you're talking about all the, the little people that put it together as well, all the way to stats. And, it makes for, you appreciate the game a lot more now when you watch it than you did before you actually started working with the network, I'm sure.
All right, guys, one thing we have not discussed tonight and we have to get to, finally, after the long wait, and it's a month or a few weeks too late, the NFL draft is upon us Thursday evening. You guys are both silver and black Raider fans. Where do you think the Raiders go in the first round?
Sammy Watkins.
Man, I would love to have Sammy Watkins, as the first pick. I can't help but think that Reggie McKenzie, though, is looking at solidifying that offensive line. And if he's still there, I'm thinking that Greg Olsen is the pick that the Oakland Raiders will have. I heard that he is very similar to, and this is a great compliment to Greg Olsen and not a slap in the face to Walter Jones, but that's what they're comparing him to. And I'm thinking, man, if that's the case, you got to jump on somebody like that to solidify your offensive line.
And where do you guys think Clowney and, of course, Johnny Football end up?
That's a million-dollar question.
Many millions, if you're
yeah. I could care less where Johnny Manziel goes, but you got to keep your eye on Clowney. I mean, this guy, I think he's a freak of nature that can actually change a game from a defensive aspect. And, if he goes to the right team, I don't know what the Texans are thinking right now, but, if they could have somebody like a Clowney, helping out or complimenting a J.J. Watt, can you imagine what type of a team they could have as far as a pass rush is concerned? So, any team that gets him is definitely going to benefit.
Yeah, in fact, what I was thinking about that this morning on my way into work, because, I listen to sports talk radio all day long, and they were talking about, partnering up Clowney and Watt, and you can't forget that they got Brian Cushing, at linebacker. And so it's like, I mean, that that defense would be spectacular if the Texans do decide to go ahead and take Clowney.
Do you guys have any concerns about his work ethic?
I don't. I mean, not at all. I honestly think a lot of it is just there's so much, especially nowadays with social media. And people putting out these reports and they're an unnamed source. The guy was a college football player, did some spectacular things on the field, and every single player out there takes a little bit of a break, and you do that sometimes just so you can be there in the fourth quarter. you know, but I think that bottom line is, I think he's heard all the people talking about him and kind of dissing him and saying that he has a bad work ethic. And I think he has something to prove right now.
Hey, you know, and keep in mind, David and Sean, you know, you're talking about two diehard fans of the Raider Nation, and you ask us about work ethic. Shoot, I think that, you know, Jadeveon Clowney comes in with a better work ethic than most of the players that we had over the past 7 to 8 years. So, I mean, work ethic. Come on, that guy. he's ready made.
Yeah. In fact, you know what's funny is when you look at Clowney. And I was talking to another friend of mine. I said, you know, Jadeveon Clowney, I know a lot of people, they've been kind of comparing him to Lawrence Taylor. But to me, I kind of look at him more like a Javon Kearse type player. You know, I mean, just...
Long, and he can get after it and cause a disturbance. You know, I can see him demanding a double team. So, you know, again, whichever team. And if he flies down to that number five pick, I'm sure that Reggie's going to have to make a choice. And gosh, man, I'd pick him, definitely.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It put like this. In fact, I have my fingers crossed that I hope he slides down just so we can't see him in silver and black.
Moving on to baseball. It is May, so there's a long way to go. But if there is a big series in May, there's one going on right now in Oakland as the A's host the Mariners for 4 games in 3 days. So far, the first game, top of the fifth, it is 3-2 Seattle.
Yeah, you know, I love talking about, you know, baseball, Sean, and I've said this before, I love talking about baseball in October, you know, and so right now I think the teams are jostling, you know, for, you know, that positioning during the season. I mean, like I told you before, right now, you know, Oakland's taking the first two series of this West Coast matchup in the AL West, but, you know, it's a long season, man. I think there's about 120 more to go. So, you know, what my biggest concern is, Sean and David, is the longevity of the players. And so when you're talking about the Oakland A's, you're talking about some guys who are injured right now. You know, they've been dinged up since spring training. You know, and we're talking about pivotal players. You know, you're talking about Yunis Cespedes. And, you know, of course, Reddick is out. Their pitching is beleaguered, but yet they still managed to get it done. And, of course, you can't take anything away from the Mariners. The Mariners are, you know, a team that's trying to get some type of respect in the AL West. And over the past few years, that hasn't been the case when you have the Texas Rangers and the Oakland A's, of course, you know, winners of 3 straight AL West. So, you know, I don't know about this battle for supremacy. I mean, I just think it's a little too early to be talking about that right now.
Yeah, I agree, because especially it's so early on the season, and like you said, you know, even though Oakland are kind of dinged up, you know, they're still in first place, but ironically, I mean, it's still so early on the season that right now the Mariners, you know, as far back as they are, they're only 4 games out of first, and so, you know, it's a long season, and right now for me, the one area that I'm really kind of interested in is just to see the development of Robinson Cano in Seattle, because I know he caught a lot of heat for leaving the Yankees and going to Seattle. And of course, you always get people who want, oh, he took the money. And it's like, well, of course, you know, it's like, this is, it's a business, you know. But for me, one thing I did notice, I was kind of looking at, looking at how Robinson has been doing this year. And, you know, his numbers are down his numbers are down. Like I said, we're still early on in the season. But, you know, I kind of wonder if he's kind of feeling some of the pressure that of the expectation that's been put on him behind that contract and leaving the Yankees and coming to Seattle, because right now, his numbers right now, they haven't been this low since 2007, 2008.
Well, Cano's been on a tear recently. I believe in the last 12 games, he's hitting close to .375, and the only number that's really low is his home runs. He's only got one so far this year, so he's not a Babe Ruth, Barry Bonds, Griffey. He's not a huge home run slugger. He had the advantage of that short porch in New York for half of his games that he doesn't necessarily have in Seattle. And yeah, it's going to take some time for him to adjust to everything and the new surroundings. And, you know, in terms of numbers, I mean, they're pretty much right there to where he's been his entire career.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily a problem with Robinson Cano, the player, as far as his numbers are concerned. I think it's more a concern of Robinson Cano, the purse. And what I mean by that is when you have a huge salary that like Robinson has, it makes it tough because, you know, you start to feel and it starts to weigh on you game in and game out. If you're not in a certain position as a team, then you feel that, you know, at some point you have to press a little bit more. The media is starting to look at you to produce a little bit more. And, you know, it's going to be something that Robinson's going to have to figure out as far as getting the rest of his players and his teammates around him to be better. Now, again, the Mariners are showing strides on becoming better. Of course, they're only four games out of first place. But right now, there aren't the signs that show that strong leadership. Again, his numbers are great, but, but that purse, again, wears on you, and it starts to, you know, become an issue, you know, down the line if things don't get better.
Yeah, most definitely. In fact, you know, that's also kind of an area that I've always looked at. Like you said, once you're getting that kind of a salary, there's a certain expectation that gets put on the player, and that begins to weigh on them. And for me, I kind of look at it as, you know, there's also a responsibility, of the GM of the organization to surround those players with other pieces. Because I mean, it doesn't matter. You can bring in a slugger who can just knock it out of the park. But if you don't have pitching and you don't have the guys on the field that can make plays, it doesn't matter how many home runs you hit. It's like, you know, your team's still going to lose.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the name of most sports, you score more, you win the game. And that's the bottom line. And it doesn't matter how you do it, whether it be bunting for seven runs or hitting four grand slams or you pitch a no-hitter, don't allow any runs. There's variables every which way you look. And, you know, it's a super long season in major leagues, and some will say too long. And like I said at the beginning of talking about the A's and the M's, it's like, it's May. It's still very early, but at the same time, with Seattle being four games out, if the A's sweep these four games, that sets them way behind the eight ball. The Mariners would be eight games out, and things would be turning from going pretty decent. They're 7-3 in their last 10 to now we're eight games out. What in the world is wrong? Are we doing anything right? Conversely, if they win three or even four, they're right there with the A's, eyeballing first place. So you never want to lose four in a row, three in a row, if you're any team. And so it'll be interesting to see how these four games play out, especially being the fact that they're in 3 days. They have a doubleheader on Wednesday.
Yeah, Sean, you're hitting it right on the head. And from what I'm hearing, it sounds like it's important for Seattle to actually have a good series in this week, especially against Oakland. It's probably more important for Seattle to have one than Oakland. Oakland's sitting in a very good position. They know who they are. They know what type of personnel and type of team that they have. So it's not as important for them to actually get out there and take care of business just yet. I think they're just, you know, looking to bide their time. If they get two out of four, then that's great. If they get three out of four, then I think that they're going to be licking their chops and saying, hey, man, we're a little bit better than we thought. But for Seattle, it seems like it's a must-win to actually, you know, that uphill battle in the beginning of the season to actually get a little bit of respect. Yeah, I would say that it's probably more important for Seattle to win the series this time of the year than Oakland.
Well, you know, the one area that I kind of I really actually kind of feel for the Mariners at is, you know, to be playing your games right across the street from the Super Bowl champions. You know, I mean, even though it's a completely different sport, that has to put a little bit of pressure on the Mariners just to kind of feel like, okay, you know, we got these guys right across the street, and they just mowed down the Broncos in the Super Bowl and just, I mean, did it in convincing fashion. And so, you know, I have to wonder how much that kind of plays into the Mariners' mind, because, you know, it's been a while since the Mariners have made a lot of noise. And like I said, it's like right now you got the Super Bowl champs right across the street, and so now people are kind of looking at them like, okay, you know what are you guys going to do?
Yeah, and it's something that it's time for the players to put up or shut up, and that being the young players that have been here, the Justin Smokes, the Dustin Ackleys. It's time for them to show that they're true major leaguers and not have, okay, we had a hot month, but then we took 2.5 months where we couldn't hit the side of a barn. And, you know, the owners are finally opening up their checkbook and bringing in the canoe, bringing in the closer from Tampa Bay, Rodney, and showing some signs that they are willing to spend the money. And just all the pieces right now need to align for good things to happen for the Mariners here in 2014. And we'll see whether that will happen or not. All right, Mr. Massey, let's get to what we touched on earlier. A little bit south of I-5 from where you are, down there at Oregon State in Corvallis, they have fired their head basketball coach 6 weeks after the season. What's your take on that?
Well, my take on that is, first of all, I mean, I think that most people thought that if they were going to fire Coach Robinson, they would have done it, you know, right after the season got over, you know, but they didn't. They waited, and their, you know, the athletic director, you know, he kind of gave him a vote of confidence. But I think that there was so much pressure just from booster and alumni because they, you know, they want that program to get turned around. However, I think also as a college and as alumni and as boosters, they have to be realistic. I mean, right now, as far as college athletics in general, it's an arms race. I mean, and especially when you have University of Oregon right down the road, and they have the brand new Matthew Knight Arena, and have the training facilities, and they have all the facilities in the new dorm for all the athletes. I mean, it makes it tough for Oregon State to get those blue chip players. And so, you know, for me, I'm just kind of really curious to see who they bring in as the next head coach, because I really don't think that he'll have, you know, any more success than Robinson did, because the problem isn't necessarily with the coach itself. The problem is with the overall program.
Yeah, it's definitely been something to where things didn't work out down there at Oregon State for Coach Robinson, and he had an under 500 record, and really, I mean, he had a really big contract, so they were paying him good money, but they weren't getting the results.
Exactly, yeah, and like I said, I mean, I think that if they could get, I mean, it doesn't have to be a big name coach. In fact, I heard somebody talk about Ben Howland today or Lester Connor. And they were saying that they thought that Ben Howland would be a big name. But honestly, I think that they'd be better served to go after a guy like Lester Connor, who is an Oregon State alum, who has NBA experience, who's been a coach been assistant coach in the NBA. I think it'd be better off to kind of build kind of from the ground up that way, because Lester Connor, even though it's been years since he played at Oregon State, he's still a name. He's still a known name in Corvallis. And I think that that's kind of the route they should go, because realistically, going out and bringing in a big-name coach but not necessarily kind of building the program from the ground up. But more importantly, you know, they have to kind of step their game up as far as their facilities go. And, I mean, and this isn't even me being biased as a former Duck. It's like when you look at Matthew Knight Arena compared to, you know, Gill Coliseum, it's night and day.
And, David, we got to let Sean Boyd run. If you are still there, Mr. Boyd, it's been good having you call in and talk to us for a little bit. And, you know, hopefully David did a decent job in your shoes, and we'll look forward to doing it up right next week.
Oh, man, awesome job, man. Again, I'm excited, you know, to actually be on the show with the both of you guys as a guest. And so, man, you talk about a juxtapose, man. I mean, this is different. This is bizarro in all kinds of ways, but man, yeah, I got to get ready to run here. Thanks for having me on as a guest on my own show. So, man, we'll talk to you guys later. Thanks for having me on, man.
All right, Sean. Hey, Sean, make sure to have your phone on Thursday, because I'll be texting you during the draft.
Oh, yes. I, as a matter of fact, I will be at Bullwings in Sacramento. For those of you in Northern California, we will be at Bullwings having a Raider Nation party there, so definitely come on out there. If you want to say hi to one half of the Double S Express, please do. Before I go again, thanks for mentioning that. I also want to send a shout-out to Sacramento Republic, the new soccer team that we have in Sacramento. Man, two home crowds in a row, 22,000 and 17,000. Some big things happening down here in Northern California as far as soccer is concerned. So, man, definitely support these sports in Sacramento and Northern California. Hey, guys, again, thanks for having me on the show. And we look forward to going with show 52. 1 year, Mr. Wally. next week, man. But I'm out, man. Guys, have fun, and we'll talk to you next week.
Take care, buddy.
There goes Sean Boyd, one half of the Double S Express. Mr. Massey doing a fine job filling in for him tonight. It's been fun.
Hey, I've enjoyed myself. Like I said, first time actually being a host versus a guest. And like I said, if you ever need me in the future, I'm your guy. Just let me know.
Absolutely. We'll definitely look forward to bringing it back on and maybe even doing a three-headed monster with all three of us for the whole time. So great job tonight. The check is in the mail, Mr. Massey. This is show 51 of On the Double with the Double S Express. Big thank you to our guest tonight, Spiro Dedis of CBS Sports, Steve Whitehead, wide receiver for the Tri-Cities Fever in the Indoor Football League and trainer at Elite Ambitions in Pasco, Washington. And definitely a big-time thank you to David Massey for filling in for Mr. Sean Boyd tonight. It's been great. We'll do it again next week right here on the Double with the Double S Express.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.